This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, September 25th, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. You might wonder why White Claw, the official boozy low-carb beverage of summer, took so long to arrive. Well, the answer appears to be tax laws. Cato's Will Yateman comments.
Josh Barrow wrote this article at New York Magazine, How Tax Policy Gave Us White Claw. And I guess I had an inkling that this was true because you can't really go out and buy vodka soda or gin and tonic in a can. I mean, it's technically possible to purchase those things, but they're regulated in such a way that it's not palatable for a lot of companies to produce them. But White Claw is different.
Indeed, it is. It takes advantage, or let me put it this way: the tax disparity of which you just spoke has long been of very much interest to beer manufacturers. That is to say, it's sort of the holy grail of beer production is to get a drink that tastes like a mixed liquor drink, but is nonetheless brewed like a beer, and thereby you gain this beneficial tax policy. That's why in the past we've had beverages like more recently Mike's Hard Lemonade, but from my youth, we had the Zimas of the world. The problem was, evidently, and I've actually never had a Zima nor a Mike's Hard Lemonade, but because they're brewed like beers, they taste like beer. So, you know, when you're shooting for a mixed drink, but it tastes like beer, that's perhaps inimical to sales. The White Claw breakthrough, sort of the holy grail of this, taking advantage of this disparity in tax treatment between canned liquor and canned beer, is that it's not fermented from grains like beer and like the Zimas, these other alternative beverages of the past. Instead, it's fermented from sugar, which gives it this flavorless quality, much like a vodka soda. So it's a combination of one, the incentive provided by this wacky, arbitrary, I'll argue, tax policy, and then two, this technological breakthrough, if you will, whereby we're brewing the drink from sugar as opposed to grains, and thereby it doesn't taste like beer. So, but it, as a result, it's become this craze, it's associated with millennials. I'll say this, however, I do wonder, the extent to which this is a millennial fad, if you will. I do wonder the extent to which, if there were not this arbitrary disparity between canned liquor and canned beer, whether or not people wouldn't have been enjoying this sort of drink, you know, for decades. Does it necessarily have to be a millennial fad? Could this just be it's a good product that there was no or less of an incentive to put it on the market for so long due to this sort of silly tax policy?
Yeah, another difference, though, a key difference, I think, between Zima, Smirnoff Ice, and Mike's Hard Lemonade, aside from the flavor, is the number of calories and carbohydrates specifically in the product. White Claw advertises boldly, as the other Truly or Bon and Vive, the Anheuser-Busch product that is also a canned, spiked club soda. Very low in calories, 2 grams of carbohydrates per serving.
That is amazing. Wow. I mean, I'll say I had never heard of this product until you put it on my radar in advance of this podcast. I asked our household millennial expert, my wife, about it, and she raved about it. She says that everyone she knows is drinking it. I did a little research online. Unbelievably, this stuff evidently outsold Budweiser in America last July, which blows my mind. I mean, its market share has been exploding of late. It says here it's now a $1 billion industry. Sales surpassed $1 billion for the first time last year. That was a 200% increase over the previous year, and they're projecting a 300% increase this year. There's actually a nationwide shortage of White Claw. It's being reported as the nation, we've been declawed, and it's causing some sort of some degree of consternation amongst its regular drinkers. But this is a cultural phenomenon about which I was unaware. It's pretty interesting.
But it's also a nice thing to see in the marketplace. That is, in general, markets respond to incentives, producers respond to incentives, consumers respond to incentives, and to say that this innovation was created by tax policy is not, that's not an overstatement.
On the one hand, yes, people respond to incentives, self-interested actors, and that's certainly a tenet we believe in here. On the other hand, I will note, as I said at the outset, this is a success story of innovation in the face of these incentives provided by this arbitrary tax policy. But one does wonder, or at least I wonder, whether or not we could have been enjoying White Claw-like drinks for decades. That is to say, if we had been allowed to toss vodka and soda into a can, make the alcohol content about 5%, you know, about that like beer, and then sell them in six packs. So I do wonder, as I understand it, there sort of is no difference between that, between doing just that, making a vodka soda in a can that tastes just like, if not better than White Claw. So on the one hand, this is great. I'm glad that this innovation occurred, that a lot of people are enjoying this White Claw. On the other hand, I think it's I sort of regret the fact that we perhaps could have been enjoying this for decades had not this sort of silly, arbitrary distinction in the tax policy between canned vodka sodas at 5%, you know, per volume alcohol and non-liquor based canned vodka-like, vodka soda-like drinks.
This was a market that was dominated for the most part by beer. This is a new entrant that competes with beer on a metric that beer has been trying to compete on for a while now. Michelob Ultra is very low carbohydrate beer, but of course it's still beer. It still tastes like beer, arguably. But you would expect that would-be producers of, let's say, bourbon and Coke or, you know, gin and tonic or that sort of thing to go into a can would say, hey, why are these guys getting to do this thing? Why can't we do it? We've been waiting out here in the wilderness selling these big bottles of liquor. We'd love to sell 12 packs. And I wonder what kind of impetus this might create for a regulatory change.
Well, I mean, I'll note this. That sounds delicious. I mean, whereas I don't really have much interest in one of these White Claws, I kind of do have an interest in a six-pack of bourbon and Coke. With respect to other companies getting in the game, I do have a little research tidbit on that I discerned in advance of this podcast. This craze is not gone unnoticed by the brewers of the world. And indeed, they're hopping on this train. And this one in particular, so Anheuser-Busch, their big response to the White Claw phenomenon, they're targeting a college-age audience with, and this is no joke, natural light seltzer. That just sounds repulsive. But, you know, God willing, the good people at Anheuser-Busch, you know, this is a hot product. But wow, that's the direction that competition is taking. So, you know, I don't know if we have any Natty Light fans in our audience, but, you know, please check it out. Natural Light Seltzer, soon in a grocery store near you.
I also think Miller Coors and La Colombe are planning to come out with a hard coffee.
Oh, all right.
In a can, which is a wonderful transition if you exist solely on uppers and downers. it's a nice transition beverage for the middle of the day to switch from coffee to alcohol.
Well, it's a full day's worth of nutrition.
But, you know, more broadly, though, we've seen this kind of thing happen before. There's a reason why there's a 30-minute recording limit. I don't know the exact details, but for DSLRs, the digital cameras that also record video, there's a hard limit on being able to record onto DSLRs, and part of that is driven by tax policy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if we look outside the United States, I mean, I know for a fact that energy policy used to be my bailiwick, that in response to tax incentives in northern China, that they built hundreds of megawatts worth of wind turbines that were spinning and thereby engendering the tax credits, but that weren't actually connected to the grid. I mean, they were, you know, the tax credit was given merely for, you know, the wheels spinning, not for actually, you know, electricity used. So even to absurd lengths, people, you know, wouldn't you know it, they respond to incentives.
Will Yateman is a research fellow at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.